A Basque song sung during the Spanish Civil War. The title, We Are the Soldiers of the Basque Land. Here's the translation of the last line. Nobody will enter the land of the Basques so long as a fighter remains on his feet. This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. Today on the Afternoon Magazine, the Basque. The land of the Basque is found along the southern border of France and in northern Spain. While they are small in number, their mark on Europe and the world has been large. They have no country but consider themselves a nation. They have been fierce defenders of their way of life, but they have also been great negotiators. Joining us this afternoon to talk with us about the Basque, Mark Kurlansky. He's the author of The Basque History of the World. Kurlansky says the Basque have the oldest European culture and the oldest known European language. They were among Europe's first explorers, whalers, industrialists, and international traders. How have they survived, and what lies ahead for them? Two of the questions we'll examine in this portion of the program. Listeners, you can join us with your questions and comments. Here are the telephone numbers in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Elsewhere, toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. Mark Kurlansky is a journalist. He first visited the Basque provinces to write about the end of Franco's dictatorship. He has also reported on international affairs covering the Caribbean, Haiti, and Cuba in particular. His best-selling book, Cod, a biography of the fish that changed the world, received the James Beard Award for Excellence in Food Writing and was chosen by the New York Public Library as one of the best books of 1997. The Basque History of the World is published by Walker. Toll-free 1-800-222-WILL in Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL. Mark Kurlansky, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. And I'm not getting a response there on the telephone line. Maybe what we need to do is make the call again. I'm not quite sure what the story is. Let's hear another Basque tune, this also from Songs of the Spanish Civil War. We are going to hear a tune that the translation for which is Sailors. And let me find it. Let's find this. And now I believe we might have our guest, so we'll save this tune for later. Mark Kurlansky, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, I don't know what happened there.
No, I don't either.
Okay. Did you hear the introduction?
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know if I should sum it up for you or we should just go ahead and move on. Basically what I said, maybe I should sum it up so you know where I'm coming from here this afternoon. We started with a Basque song sung during the Spanish Civil War. The title, We Are the Soldiers of the Basque Land, and the translation,
oh, yeah.
The translation of the last line, nobody will enter the land of the Basques so long as a fighter remains on his feet. And then I went on to tell the audience that the Basque have been fierce defenders of their way of life, but they've also been great negotiators. And then I told the audience about you and about the book, and so there we are.
Great. Actually, that song is a kind of a hymn that was used not only in the Spanish Civil War, but by Basque units that fought for the Allies in World War II, and is still sometimes sung by militant Basque nationalists.
Mm. You went to this region of the world to cover the end of the Franco dictatorship.
Yeah, well, I went to cover the Franco dictatorship. I'm happy to say it did turn out to be the end of it. It was, you know, in the last couple of years of his life, Spain seemed totally exhausted, and everybody was just waiting for him to die. Most people thought he would have died years before that, and the Basques were the only people who were really actively resisting the dictatorship at that point. So initially it was really the only story going on.
Yeah. What did you find on your first trip or your first trips to the Basque land at that time?
Well, very different than now. There was a distinct Basque culture, but in a lot of ways it was in hiding. You almost never heard people speaking Basque, and when they were whispering. You couldn't quite catch it. But there was still, you know, because of the architecture and sports and various other things, it was clear that it was a distinct culture that was different from the rest of Spain, and it even physically looks different from Spain. It's very, very green and lush and very beautiful. Became intrigued.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose I just had a respect for their sense of resistance, but then as I learned more about their culture, I became intrigued with the culture.
Yeah.
And just the determination to preserve their culture, which I think is a very interesting and important concept in the times we live in. Sense that cultures are disappearing, and even the idea is even around that it's good that cultures are disappearing and we're all melting together and becoming one world community. And here are these people who say, yes, let's all work together in the world, and are very much internationalists, not at all isolationists. But they want to preserve their own distinct culture.
A country that is not a nation. They've kept, however, their culture alive over centuries. They kept their language alive through Franco. How have they managed to keep themselves together?
Well, I think contrary to the sort of stereotypical image of the Basques, they have preserved their way of life by being actually very flexible and very open to negotiating, and have always throughout history recognized that there were powers greater than themselves and sought to negotiate with those powers to preserve what was most important to them. And you know, perhaps to negotiate away things that were not important to them, such as borders.
Hmm.
The Basques have always had their own distinct relationships with whatever the powers were. They were unique in the Roman Empire, and when Ferdinand started to put together what became Spain, they negotiated a unique relationship that lasted in Spanish history until the Carlist Wars in the 19th century, really until the 1870s. A group sort of that was part of Spain, but was part of Spain in a different way. And the part that's on the French side had been able to do the same with the powers in France until the French Revolution. The French Revolution was extremely repressive of small groups. It was very much into this idea of assimilation, and we're all just going to be Frenchmen. And they were never able to negotiate much beyond that with France. But in Spain, for 100 years more, they were.
Mm.
And so they have a long tradition of this kind of a partnership, but a special kind of partnership. And that's what they have always sought and what they still seek.
Yeah. The area of the world they live in is relatively small, 8,200 square miles.
Yeah.
And their number not large.
Yeah, about 2.4 million, including the French and Spanish side, and an area about the size of the state of New Hampshire.
yet you report in the Basque History of the World that they were among Europe's first explorers, whalers, capitalists, and international traders.
Yeah, and industrialists.
Yeah. What led them out into the world? Why do you think they were ahead of their times?
Well, I think it was a necessity. The Basques always understood that to preserve their distinct character, that they had to have a strong economy. And it's not a very naturally endowed part of the world. In addition to being small, it doesn't have very rich soil or very particularly rich fishing grounds. And so they've always had to go out into the world in order to build an economy. So they traveled further than other people in their day, and they always sought new ideas in commerce and in industry that brought the Bessemer converter to Southern Europe. Always looked for new ideas.
Mm. We're talking this afternoon with Mark Kurlansky. His latest book is The Basque History of the World. This is The Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. We have a caller waiting to talk with us on line 4 in Eureka. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. A very interesting topic. I studied Spanish in high school and college a lot and listened to Radio Exterior de España, and quite often I find references to Basque terrorists. And maybe like other groups, they are exaggerated. There's a political point in it. My question would be, do the, quote, people who do violence, I don't like to use the word terrorist, I think it's an overused word, do those people who do those kind of acts have a lot of support, or does it just seem to be maybe isolated groups that are kind of out of the mainstream of others who want to use that to achieve their ends, and would do still a majority of the people want their own nation or politically independent?
Wow. Well, a good question.
Uh-huh.
Or five of them, I think.
Let
me try to take them on one at a time. I agree with you that the word terrorist is very overused, although if you're killed, I think it's a moot point what term is used for it.
Yeah, that's true.
But in fact, the violent Basque group, ETA, has almost never practiced the kind of terrorism that, for example, the IRA randomly bombing a busy street in London. ETA has tended to have very specific and very politically motivated targets, individuals. It's difficult to say how much support they have, but it doesn't seem like they have very much support. Considering the fact that if you look at the voting patterns, you see that most Basques vote for nationalist parties, which is to say parties that represent the idea of negotiating some sort of a different relationship with Spain. But most of these parties do not advocate and, in fact, condemn violence. It's also important to point out that ETA now denounces violence and has for over a year now. I mean, that was widely approved. I mean, a great relief, I think, to a lot of Basques. I don't think violence as a tactic has been very popular in Spain since the death of Franco. The idea of negotiating some sort of a different relationship with Spain, I think, is very popular, but not. I think it's widely felt that violence is not necessary at this point. And as I say, even ETA at this point has unilaterally, you know, just on their own, denounced violence and really gotten nothing for it in response from the Spanish government.
Would it be similar to the kind of political struggle going on in Canada between, say, the Parti Québécois and the federal government of Canada? I guess the word that has been used, most of it is sovereignty association, but I mean in the fact that they could still retain their national characteristics but live within the framework of, I guess what you're saying is they would still live within the framework of an independent of the nation state of Spain.
Yeah, I mean, there's several important differences with the Quebec situation. First of all, I believe there's only been one, maybe two, incidents of violence in the entire history of that.
Yes, that's right.
And the other thing, and this may not be completely disconnected from that fact, is that the Canadian government is willing to constantly hold referendums, and at any point that the Quebecers decide to vote themselves independent, they've got it. And it is against the Spanish Constitution. It's unconstitutional to hold the kind of referendum that's held in Quebec. And this is part of the problem, is that the 1978 Constitution that was written after the death of Franco basically forbids much of a dialogue about this. And so, for example, we all just sort of guess at what the majority of Basques have for a position because they can't have referendums.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Other calls are welcome in Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL. Anywhere else you're listening in Illinois or Indiana, call us toll-free, 1-800-222-WILL. I think it's interesting, Mark Kurlansky, that you write in the book, separatist never has been what the Basque are about.
Yes, I mean, it's... when you say the word separatist, it implies a kind of a isolationism, a desire to be apart, which has always been very contrary to the Basque view of the world, which is why I titled the book The Basque History of the World, because Basques see their history and world history as completely connected. You know, the last thing they would want is to be a sealed-off, quaint little enclave.
Yeah. You know, it seems, though, that as the Basques have been pioneers in so many things and have been out in the world and are very much a part of the world, not meaning a part separate from, a part of the world, they strike me as being quite conservative in terms of daily life, and I think this also might be a clue as to how and why they have survived.
Well, they are they're very conservative in the usual ways that we think of as conservatism. I mean, they're very religious and they're very family oriented, mm-hmm. and they're very pro business. There are, of course, also leftist Basques. And one of the problems in Basque politics has always been that there has never been a strong leftist nationalist party that was nonviolent. You know, you've almost been forced to choose between leftist violence or right-wing nonviolence if you're a Basque nationalist. There have been attempts at left-wing nonviolent parties, but they've never really taken hold. The traditional Basque nationalist party, which dominates Basque politics, is very conservative in that it's, you know, it's a pro-business party, and most of the key figures in it own family businesses. It's the old industrial oligarchy, and this is it's kind of a perplexing thing, because at the same time these people are really very much rebels, defying the established order.
Right or left, would it be fair to say they're tenacious keepers of family traditions?
Yes, I suppose this is why they're inevitably conservative, is that they're tenacious keepers of all traditions. They try to lose absolutely nothing that is traditionally Basque.
Would you tell us about the baker who makes Ghetto Basque?
Jeanine Perret, in a little town called Sempe, which is in the French part of Basque land. And she has this shop that has made nothing but this one cake, Gâteau Basque, since the mid-19th century, always in her family, and always the same recipe, which makes it incredibly interesting to me, because you taste this thing, and it doesn't taste like a modern concept of a cake at all. It's a much older thing, and it's never, not only has never altered the recipe, I mean, she's never, that family has never changed a chair or anything in that shop. And in fact, I have in the book a picture of her grandfather and great-grandfather sitting out in front of the shop, and the chairs and table that they're sitting by are still there. But she will not give out the recipe to the cake, because she says that, you know, that recipe is, she actually used the phrase, the house of my father, which is a phrase you hear over and over again, which became a famous poem. I will defend the house of my father against the wolves. You quite often will hear Basques talk about the house of their father, which goes back to a tradition of maintaining family houses, which were really clans. And many people can trace their family back to some ancestral house. Basque name their houses, even today. And I lived in a house in Andai, and it had a name. And often Basques will introduce themselves to other Basques not by their family name, but by the name of some ancestral house. In some cases, the houses aren't even standing anymore, but there's this idea of the house, and they talk of, in terms of preserving the house.
What kind of names, what type of name do they give houses?
Oh, they're usually names like House on a Hill, House Behind the Pine Trees, Two Houses Down from the Ridge.
Descriptive.
And a lot of family names are like that, too. As a matter of fact, the probably the most common Basque last name is Echeverria, which means new house.
We have another caller waiting to talk with us on the toll-free line in Manteno. Good afternoon.
Hello? Okay, I'm on line four.
You are. You're on the air.
All right, thank you. My ancestors on my father's side came from Languedoc. That's a department of France. And some of the names, like my grandmother's maiden name was Kaiserga. and another name was Uzet, E-U-Z-E-T, or Uze. Does the guest know? And my father's surname was Isser, I-S-S-E-R-T. Do we have any connection with Basque country?
I don't think so. I think you're connected with Catalan.
Catalan?
Yeah, that's in the Catalan part of France.
Okay, well, we're near Carcassonne.
Yeah.
Okay. So then we wouldn't. I'd be proud if I was. I'm excited. I think the Basque.
Well, Catalans are fine people also. Very different.
Uh-huh. Okay.
They speak a Latin language. And,
yeah, so patois. Now, that means just the dialogue or dialect?
Well, Catalan is more than a dialect. It's a distinct Latin language, just like Spanish or French or Portuguese.
Well, we have Catars there, the Catars that were... in fact, I think the king of France, you know, with the religious persecution... just emptied this place of its original settlers or people, and you know, because of their religious Protestant, you know, revolting against the Catholic Church, and the king being Catholic, was very hard on that area. It was under martial law for years.
Well, I mean, France in general was trying to assimilate all of these regions and all of these. Cultures, actually, in that sense, was much more repressive than Spain, because the Castilians always tried to usually tried to negotiate relationships. Ferdinand, after all, was not a Castilian; he was an Aragon, and in his day, Aragon. Felt as distinct as Basques or Catalans, and had their own laws. And he understood the feelings of Basques very well, and Basques were able to negotiate quite well with him.
I want to thank the caller for his call this afternoon. This brings up an interesting area in my mind, and that is the language. Spoken by the Basque, Euskera, the oldest known European language.
Yeah, I mean, nobody really knows how old it is, but it's not Indo-European, and it's not connected to any other known language. So all the evidence is that it is a language and from a people that were there before all of these Indo-European invasions. So, you know, it's older than Celtic and older than Latin. And there may very well have been, you know, there probably were other languages like it at one time, and it's the only language to survive. And the Romans were very successful assimilators, and, you know, by the time the Romans... were gone in 400. The Basques were already in this situation where they were completely surrounded by people who spoke Latin-based languages and used Latin-based laws, and they were the only ones who were different.
Mm. An interesting development in Basque history that grew out of Etta. What is it to be a Basque to speak Euskera?
Yeah, I mean, actually, much older than Etta, very long-standing debate. It's interesting to note that in Euskera, in the Basque language, there is no way to say Basque. Basque comes from the word Bascon. Bascones is what the Romans called them. But the only word they have in their own language is Euskaldun, which means someone who speaks Euskera, someone who speaks the Basque language. So apparently the original way in which they defined themselves was the language.
Mm.
Now you get into a very complicated debate at this point, because there are many people who live in Basque Country who are from old Basque families and have old Basque names and typically Basque faces, but don't speak Basque because often because of the Franco years. And are they then Basque?
Mm-hmm.
And then there are many people who, for example, when Vizcaya became a huge industrial center and they brought up all of these workers from southern Spain, and their descendants have now lived many generations. I mean, this was in the mid-19th century these people came. And, you know, so they are now Basque, and there are people who are even... I mean, ETA was founded by somebody who had a Basque mother and a Castilian father. You know, and there are many militant Basques who have only been Basque for one generation or two generations. So it becomes very complicated.
Mm-hmm.
All the retirees from Paris who live in Saint-Jean-de-Luz in the Basque coast of France, are they Basque? Becomes a very complex debate. Legally, of course, anybody who lives in Basque land is a Basque.
Yeah, that's a very complicated question. What does it mean to be Basque? And the origins of this people remain unknown.
Yes, completely unknown because there really is no, there's no written record before the Romans, and the Romans wrote of a people who had been there for a long time. There are relics that have been found, including cave drawings and, you know, many ancient things. Were those people who made these objects Basque? There's no way of knowing.
Hmm. We're talking this afternoon with Mark Kurlansky, author of The Basque History of the World. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. Our next caller this afternoon is on Line 1 in Champaign County. Good afternoon.
Hello there.
Hi.
I wanted to ask about a couple of things, and then I'll hang up. In this, did you study the Basque going to South America much? I mean, did you, I understand there's still... you know, some identification in that region, too, and they feel Basque, despite the fact that they're... I just the idea is sort of when did this migration mainly happen? And the other question, if I could present it and then just listen, is the bombing of Guernica. Guernica was a Basque region. Was it... I don't know if you've looked into the reasons why it was bombed and some not somewhere else. And what I'm getting at is that it wasn't probably strictly a military. They pride themselves in being good fighters and all that, but was there also the idea that these weren't quite Spanish? We can, you know, this is a demonstration, or any of those possibilities about the, you know, when Franco called in the German bombing of Guernica. I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Okay. The Basques were really the first Europeans. Among the first Europeans in both North and South America, on Columbus's voyages and after, and were always fascinated by the Americas, and were among the first people to trade, and among the first Europeans to use American products to eat corn and chili peppers. Which are still trademarks of Basque cuisine, and first Europeans to use a rubber ball, and they had a lot of trade with South America, especially Venezuela. They broke the Dutch monopoly on chocolate, and were the first to try to bring chocolate into Europe at an affordable price, and got very rich on doing that. So they have long-standing ties with both North and South America. on Guernica, the Basque Front was one of the most bitterly fought areas early in the war in 1937. Guernica was not the first place to be bombed. They did Durango and several other places before Guernica. Guernica was just the most important and the largest of the places they bombed. And it's a bit of a mystery why Guernica was chosen. Guernica was of no military importance, of tremendous symbolic importance. It's the traditional seat of Basque government. Basques have their own form of government and their own laws, and it's a system a bit like a town meeting with elected representatives, and the place where they met was always Guernica under an oak tree in a very specific spot. But a curious thing is that when the Germans bombed Guernica, they entirely destroyed the city, firebombed it, and then machine gunned people down as they fled. But they never hit this oak tree or this particular spot. So apparently that wasn't what they were trying to get either. Nobody really knows. Franco's troops entered Guernica very quickly afterwards. We never even got a body count. And the Spanish government has never released whatever papers they have on this. So it's really not known.
Yeah. Thinking of the Spanish Civil War in Guernica, was Franco's dictatorship especially brutal for the Basque?
Yeah, I mean, Franco was very clear that he specifically hated the Basques. There are seven Basque provinces, and four of them are in Spain. And two of the four were supportive of Franco to greater or lesser degrees, but two of them were very much opposed, Guipúzcoa and Vizcaya, which he always called the traitor provinces. Was more repressive there than anywhere else in Spain. Although at the same time, this was the only engine of economic development for all of Spain, because this is where all of the banking and industry was. So he was trying to rebuild the economy at the same time he was repressing the people. So it was a very strange system. Franco came from a military town and a military tradition, and there was a hatred in the Spanish military of Basques and Catalans going back to the 19th century. In 1898, when Spain lost Cuba and Puerto Rico and the Philippines and lost their empire, and this was a huge, humiliating defeat for the Spanish military, and it coincided with a period of emergence of Basque and Catalan nationalism, and so the military always saw the Basques and the Catalans as trying to kick Spain when it was down. And Franco, who himself was from Galicia, which is also a region with a very strong feeling of independence from Spain, but he grew up and always had this intense hatred of Basques.
With Franco's death, there was no effort to remove his supporters, those folks that had held him up in the government, in the military, in the police. Were there calls for such a purge in the Basque provinces of Spain?
Well, there were, and there were in other parts of Spain, and there, and also in France and the international community, until the early 80s, when there was a coup d'etat attempt. The legislature was held at gunpoint, and then the whole thing collapsed as a failure, but in a way it was kind of a success, because from that moment on, major figures such as Felipe González, who went on to be the socialist prime minister, and all of the major figures in Spain adopted this policy of trying to pacify the Franquista element rather than purge them. And France and the United States and other countries supported this, because everybody feared. You know, it's ironic that Spain has been trying to extradite Pinochet, and the Chileans have been saying, "Well, you know, we're just trying to foster a new democracy, and this kind of thing, you know, really destabilizes it, and that's why we don't want to have this guy brought to trial." And the Spanish government acts like this is unacceptable and they don't understand it, but it is exactly what Spain did.
Hmm. We're coming down to the last couple minutes here of the time that we can spend together today, and I wanted to talk with you a bit before we go about cod and the Basque. Cod and the Basque method of preserving it in salt. This turned out to be a great boon to the Basques as they were sailing and traveling around the world as they hunted whale, because voyages, you point out, could only last as long as the shelf life of the ship's provisions. Not only did you have to have you had to have the right amount of provisions to carry you on the voyage, but they had to remain edible. The Vikings dried cod and the Basque dried cod, but the Basque product was far superior. How did the two differ?
Well, the Basques used salt because they had salt, and they were used to salting because they salted whale meat. And they probably first discovered cod while pursuing whale. Cod is in northern waters, and nowhere near Basque waters. Whereas whale have a much longer migratory range, and they would winter in Basque waters and then go up to the North Atlantic in the summertime, and the Basques chased them up there. And they ran across cod, and they started preserving cod in the same way they had whale, drying it and salting it. And then because they were a very commercially oriented people, they started marketing this in the Mediterranean world, where it was a fantastic product, because about half the days of the year, the Catholic Church did not allow the eating of meat, and most Mediterraneans, unless they were extremely wealthy, couldn't afford fish, because, you know, in a Mediterranean climate, you have to eat a fish the day you catch it. There was no refrigeration, and so suddenly there was this fish that you could just stack on a cart and haul it inland for days, and it became a staple food of poor people, and is to this day a part of the cuisine of every Mediterranean country.
Mm. Fascinating. So did your first book, or not your first book, but your book before The Basque History of the World, the book on cod, did that lead you to write The Basque History of the World?
No, it was always the other way around. I had long wanted to write something about the Basque. I'd always been interested in them. The idea of the cod book slowly developed because I come from New England, where there is a kind of an obsession with cod, and growing up I had always thought of it as a New England peculiarity. There are many New England peculiarities. And as I went out in the world, I kept running into other cultures that had a similar obsession, made a cultural icon out of cod, even in places like Basque Country, where there weren't even any cod to be caught. And that's what started me gradually thinking about what a remarkable story the cod was.
Oh. Well, we're out of time, unfortunately. Thank you for talking with us this afternoon.
It's my pleasure.
Mark Kurlansky has been our guest this afternoon. He is the author of The Basque History of the World, also Cod, a biography of the fish that changed the world.